please consider supporting the Wednesday blog by going to patreon.com/sthosdkane. Thanks. Welcome back to the Wednesday blog with me, Sean Kane. It's Wednesday, 3 April 2023. This week, after getting caught down the rabbit hole of the Chicago Manual of Style's monthly Q&A newsletter, I thought I'd talk a bit about grammar. One of my favorite newsletters to read is the Chicago Manual of Style's monthly Q&A newsletter email, which tries to answer some pressing questions regarding the English language in this particularly formal academic setting that I often write in professionally. We historians in the United States use the Chicago Manual of Style as our main style guide, both for its system of extensive footnotes and for its grammatical rules. I'm familiar and have used several other systems, including the AP Style Guide and the MLA, APA, and Harvard citation systems. Yet, my preference remains Chicago for its clarity. Chicago is the preferred style for us historians, as well as the basis of the style guide used by the American Anthropological Association. English is an unusual language in a lot of ways. But in one particular way, it's unusual because we don't have a single central authoritative language academy, as does French, Spanish, Irish, and German. Our best bet is to see what our two major dictionaries say, the Oxford English Dictionary and the Merriam-Webster Dictionary. The former is the standard in the United Kingdom and throughout the Commonwealth, while the latter is the American standard developed first during the early Republic, when its initial author, Noah Webster, sought to better differentiate American English from its imperial counterpart, the better to craft a specifically Republican national language fit for our young Union. I've had my problems with Webster's dictionary for a while now, in part because I don't see the point of most of his spelling reforms, and for a good part of my teens and twenties, I used British spellings over American ones. Today, though, I've reverted to the American standards in what might well be a sign of my general weariness of this constant fight over so many different topics and issues. This was one that fell by the wayside. This month, then, the Chicago Manual's Q&A included a question about whether it was fine for an academic writer to write in the first or second person, to use the pronouns I and you. We're taught to always restrict our writing to the third person, to avoid the subjectivity that is implicit in the first person. I've begrudgingly accepted this to the extent that amid the 96,276 words that comprise the ninth draft of my dissertation, only three of those are the pronoun I. All three instances where I drift into the first person are in my footnotes, where it is necessary to explain my decisions regarding certain translations or connections that would otherwise not be possible in the English language. By contrast, I use this pronoun a great deal here in the Wednesday blog, where I'm writing to you, dear reader, in a more personal manner that I hope is evident in this text. Of the 189,993 words that I've written for the Wednesday blog before this week, 3,360 of those are the pronoun I. The response in the Q&A about using the pronoun I spoke to that concern for subjectivity, yet it also spoke of a need that our academic writing ought to be, quote, more lively and personal. I see both sides of this. More and more books are written by my fellow academics that do include more of the first person in them. Yet at the same time, Kate Turabian's Writer's Manual, an abridged version of the Chicago Manual, suggests that writers, quote, avoid beginning your sentences with I believe or I think, which go without saying. I am often frustrated to hear people using filler words like these, or like, quote, it goes without saying, or, quote, to be honest, when those are things I hope they would be adhering to in the first place. On the other hand, I've heard papers at conferences where the author reads out, quote, this author finds that blah, 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 which sounds ludicrous to me. 2 weeks ago, at the Renaissance Society of America's conference, I did make it clear where I was presenting my own theories based on the evidence that my primary sources provide. A spoken context is different than a written one. Not only can there be more repetition of material to bring a point home, one can also use more personal elements, bring oneself into the topic, and show the audience why they ought to care about it the way you do. Academic writing is quite formal, and it follows set patterns and standards. It is in many ways an intricate dance, whether a waltz or an older minuet, which we follow in order to write to one another in the same methods and manners that we will all recognize. One may want to deconstruct some of these elements of style, to borrow a title, yet those standards exist to facilitate communication. Language proscription has its place, along with all the innovations that happen each and every day in speech and writing. I might use this pronoun more in my academic writing in the future, especially if I choose to write a prologue which tells my reader why I'm fascinated by a topic that will invite them to consider it as well. I would like it if there were an English language academy in the same vein as the Académie Française, yet I would prefer to have a say in its decisions, naturally. Is that bold of me? Sure. Yet that academy's function is best served by the continued writing and publication of those of us who use the English language to express our thoughts on a daily basis. For every article or book I submit for publication about the history of animals in the Renaissance, there will be countless other works published in all manner of settings which demonstrate the versatility of this language and its uses. We academics have just as much a claim to it as anyone else, and my own English is not everyone's English. Still, we have our common grammar that keeps this language together, and that is something worthwhile. The Wednesday blog is written, read, and produced by me, Sean Kane, and I also came up with the theme music. You can learn more about my work by going to linktree.com/sthosdk. That's linktr.ee/sthosdkane. There, you'll learn more about my website and my blog. Thanks! Thanks as always to my regular listeners, including monthly supporters Elizabeth Duke, John Lundy, Alex Brisson, and George Vile. You can learn more about how to support this podcast by going to patreon.com/sthosdkane. It's only $5 a month to support, and I appreciate all their help. Thank you. This podcast is distributed by Spotify. Learn more at podcasters.spotify.com.